Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us today for our Real Estate Operations Master Series. Today's topic is Strategies for Tenant Retention. My name is Sarah Fisher, and I'm the Marketing Communications Director at Building Engines, and we're the sponsor for today's presentation. This webinar is part of our ongoing Real Estate Operations Master Series, where we present expert content from industry leaders on a variety of important buildings and facilities operations topics, all free of charge. In addition to today's webinar, we have prepared other content on this topic, including some video vignettes, some checklists, best practices, and articles that we will be sharing with you over the coming days and weeks. So please look forward to a number of follow-up emails after this webinar. Our featured speaker today is Patrick Braswell. He's co-owner of Scotland Wright Associates and formerly with Colliers International. Having negotiated over 200 lease transactions, Patrick is acutely aware of the tenant's perspective and the factors that not only attract tenants to a building, but contribute to them staying in the building. Before we begin, I want to just take care of a little housekeeping. Our session today is a one-way webinar, meaning that you can hear us speak, but we can't hear you. However, you will be able to type questions in the GoToMeeting chat window on the right-hand side of your screen at any point. You can also close that chat pane window to see more of the screen. And during the webinar, I will monitor the chat window to answer any logistical questions you might have, and then we will open the meeting up to Q&A at the end. As we prepared the agenda for the webinar, we thought some of the topics that you'd want me to cover with Patrick include, why is the tenant experience so important to driving retention? How are tenant expectations changing? And what are some of the best practices that building operations personnel should follow to proactively deliver on the tenant experience, as well as some real-world examples of why tenant experience matters? And to get us started, Patrick, could you introduce yourself to the audience?
My name is Patrick Braswell, and I am with Scotland Wright Associates. And my background is I was with Colliers International for about 7 years. So I've had the experience of working with a big shop and experience with a shop that owned a big property management company here in Atlanta. And then about a month ago, I became part owner of Scotland Wright Associates, which we are a smaller firm here in Atlanta. We don't do any sort of landlord work. We don't do property management. All we do is represent tenants that are either looking for office space or industrial space. So I've got a good understanding, especially from why did this tenant move and what was the catalyst for them moving to what kind of problems do they deal with on a day-to-day basis with their owners and with the property management within the group.
Thanks, Patrick. Our topic today is tenant experience. First off, can you give us some perspective on why providing tenants with the best possible experience is so important to a building's success?
I sent out an email to some trusted friends before I started this process, and the question I had to them was, you know, why don't we list out the top three reasons tenants come to buildings and the top three reasons tenants leave buildings? And, of course, the first response I got from just about everyone was, well, in today's economy, it goes price, location, and then service. And so I had to send another email out to everyone to say, well, that's great, and I understand that, but I'm talking to developers and property managers, so I really need to understand as far as service level within the building, you know, what are we looking at? And I got a whole different response from a lot of different areas to kind of focus in on. But the point I do want to make is once I redirected the people that I was talking to in my own mind, in today's economy with the way it is, and here in Atlanta and a ton of other markets, there are a ton of options for tenants. And everyone is desperate to keep tenants, and everyone's desperate to entice tenants to move to their buildings. So it truly is just looking at very small details that can come down to you keeping a tenant or losing a tenant based on things that you can control. Now, you can control the rental rate, and you can control what types of service you can do, which you can't control is location, but you don't want to get stuck into the rental rate battle because we both know that at that point, everyone starts to lose when it comes to who's owning the building, and you don't just want to give the thing away. So I'm going to try to focus in as much as I can on the property management side of things, what developers can do, what property managers can do for the tenants and the tenant experience.
Okay, got it. So the key message is really that tenant experience is something that you have full control over, and you need to take advantage of this. So the next question is how? Let's start at the high level and then kind of dive deeper into it.
Well, the tenant experience, from my standpoint, is all about service. Once the tenant steps into the building, whether it's on a tour or they have signed a lease and they're in there, we want to make sure that the service is there from the highest level possible. And, you know, some of the things that I mean, if we want to break it down further, is everything from, and this is, you know, elementary stuff, but it's stuff that people seem to forget sometimes. It's just making sure that the bathrooms are clean, the hallways are clean, the security people are friendly and nice. You know, the air conditioning, the HVAC, the heating works. I mean, it's funny. I can't tell you how many times I've had tenants wanting to leave the building because they couldn't get the HVAC to work properly.
You're definitely right. It starts with the basics, and every detail counts. In talking to building owners and operators out there, what have you found are some of the other keys to delivering on tenant experience?
I don't feel as though owners and property management and even the landlord reps, so to speak, do a good enough job of explaining what it is a building does as far as tenant management is concerned. So when we're out on tours with our clients, you know, the broker will be there and they'll tell you a little bit about the building and they'll tell you a little bit about the park and the amenities. But what they fail to do is tell you, you know, if there is such a system out there that is a tool for them to use when they do have issues or problems, you know, how do you get in contact with the property management? The old way is just picking up the phone and calling property management and telling them that we've got an issue and this is what we need to do. And, you know, I know that there are more efficient ways that are out there, but building owners don't make that readily known to people when they're actually out on the tour. So make sure if you're an owner of a building and developer, you get both property management and your landlord brokers to tell people what tools do you have to improve their experience once they're in the building. Don't just tell us about the amenities or, you know, the cafes over here, there's restaurants over there, parking's 3 per 1,000, but truly dive into, you know, different areas of software that you're using now or anything else that's going to improve the tenant experience.
Okay, got it. So first is having the service tools in place, and then the next piece of that is ensuring that you merchandise and communicate those capabilities to your prospective tenants and your current tenants. So Patrick, how have you found that tenants react to online systems made available to them within their buildings?
I know from my own experience with my clients, the more efficient you can make things for them, the better it's going to be and the more excited they're going to be about the building. I mean, everyone nowadays, time is our most valuable resource. And if you can save them time, whether it be the office manager or the receptionist or whoever is dealing with whatever issue they have, put in place some sort of system out there that easily gives them the option to send you what's going on and then be able to track the response time. And then once the problem is solved, you know, get another type of idea, okay, the problem's solved and here's how we solved it. I mean, that to me is a area in which the landlords do not, and I hate to say this, but they just do not do a good job with telling me or anyone else what truly is out there.
Okay. You make the point that time savings and efficiency is important to the tenant, which makes complete sense. Their time is the tenant's most valuable resource. So getting further inside the head of the tenant, what else is important to them?
I think one of the biggest keys is just response time. When a tenant has a problem, whatever the problem may be, however silly it may be or important it may be, to make sure that there's a proper response time. And from talking with a lot of tenants, I think the proper response time is within 1 to 2 hours. So once you hear about the problem, get them some sort of response within 1 or 2 hours of, okay, we understand, and this is how we're going to fix it. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've dealt with tenants that just tell me, I don't even want to work on a renewal here. The property management's awful. Response time's awful. I don't even want to deal with them. You know, I send them some sort of message that I've got a problem, and it's a day later that I get some sort of response, and then they can't even fix it.
Excellent. You're on a roll here, Patrick, so I'll just let you continue.
We're moving into where every little detail counts when it comes to keeping tenants and losing tenants, that it's down to the maintenance person, professionally dressed, knowledgeable, can hold a conversation with someone. And then I think the last thing has the power to actually do something to fix it and doesn't have to keep going back to their manager to say, well, you know, I got to get my manager. I got to ask my manager if I can do this. You know, they should be able to fix it themselves and have the power to figure out what's going on and to do it.
Okay, so what you're speaking to is using tools to empower employees to get their job done, no matter what size the task.
It's about the small details and the mundane. And from my own experience from representing tenants, you know, I personally try to make sure that I can automate as much as I can just to make it a simple, less time-consuming process for my clients. And I'm speaking directly to trying to go out and tour office space and find office space in the process of, you know, going through the proposals, the leases, and everything else. I mean, how can you take that process and the mundane things that everyone expects, how can you automate it to make it easier for your client? And I think the same goes for the property management groups and the building owners, the developers, and how you treat tenants within the building. And again, it comes down to an issue of time is our most valuable resource. So if you can take the mundane issues and automate it, it would make a world of difference. And some of those mundane issues are, you know, I have a light bulb out, I'm going to shoot an email to somebody, or I can go into my building system and, you know, type in light bulb out and someone's there within an hour. That would be amazing, and most tenants wouldn't even know that you could do that. So again, it needs to be relayed to them all the way to as far as, you know, being able to control your climate from one system. All the things that you think about as far as, you know, the light bulb being changed, climate being an issue, there's a trash pickup out in your hall, to there's a light out in the parking deck, any of these things that you can just go into one centralized location that you can explain to the tenant that either the office manager can have access to it, or, you know, everyone within the company can have access to it. If they have access to it and it's interactive and they can just take care of the mundane things without having to pick up the phone and call somebody, but they know that they can trust this system to enter in what's an issue or what problem they're having and have a response within an hour or 2 hours, it would be amazing. And again, I'll go back to the actual tours of taking clients around to different buildings. No one talks about this stuff at all. And if they did, they truly could separate themselves from their competition.
Patrick, automating the mundane makes a ton of sense, and I could see how it would be impossible to manage the level of details necessary without some online system in place. Do you find there is any reason a building would not want to do this to deliver on tenant experience?
I personally have been pushing towards automating more things, because I truly believe that that's what people want. And it is, you know, there's the old guard and the new guard, and it happens, I'm sure it's happened for years, and it will continue to always happen. But the old guard is very much, people want to see us, they want the touch, they want to hear from us, and it's all about personal relationships, eye-to-eye, one-on-one. And what I think they're failing to realize is that you can have personal relationships, and people can nowadays consider it a personal relationship via the internet. I mean, just look at the explosion of Facebook. Look at the explosion of Twitter. I mean, people live their lives on these sites, and they will tell you that this person is my best friend. Well, have you met him? No, I've never met him, but I talk to him every day on Facebook. You know, and I think that mentality is shifting more and more and more to a wider demographic. It's not just, you know, the kids in college. It's not just the 20-somethings. I mean, I'm 30 now, and I personally like to do things online. I find that it's more efficient. I find that it's quicker to get things done. I can accomplish more, and I'm one of those people. I mean, I truly have relationships with prospects and clients that have started off of the internet, whether it be LinkedIn or Twitter. When people have a question nowadays, whether you're 50 or whether you're 20, the majority of the people go to the internet first. So the concept is, well, if you can set up some system to where someone has a problem and they don't have to pick up the phone, but they can immediately deal with the problem online and get a response online. That, to me, is a powerful tool. At some point, yes, you're going to have a face-to-face interaction. I do believe that, and that will never change. However, the initial contact, the initial point, that is changing, and that no longer needs to be, and people no longer prefer it to be a face-to-face. They prefer it to start online, period.
Patrick, can you share with us an example, maybe, of an area where tenant experience is key, which we may not always think about?
Well, let's take a company that hosts a lot of informational meetings within their firm, and they're bringing people in from out of town, and they're renting out some meeting space within the building. I think, you know, a lot of buildings, or most buildings nowadays, have some sort of meeting area for their tenants within the building. And one of the things that I hear from a lot of companies is they want the process to be very simple and easy, whereas they can send an email to someone and they can book it off that email, book the actual meeting space. They could have either 4 meetings because they're meeting quarterly, or 12 meetings because they're meeting once a month. But after that, it should be very seamless, and the property management group should know what they want, how they want the table set up, what type of connectivity they need within the building, what type of presentation machinery they need in the building. And that should be a very seamless process. I have personally seen deals won and lost based off of my tenants talking directly to the property management group about the meeting space and how do they set these things up, how do you charge for them, are they free, are they not free, you know, what's your experience with doing this in the past. And through talking through the property management group, there have been some very significant differences of the professionalism and knowing what to do between one company and another. It actually amazed me because I felt like it was a very simple request, but it ended up being something that at the end of the day proved to be one building getting the tenant or the business and one not.
Maybe you could share some more stories or examples with us around how an improved tenant experience made a tangible impact on the retention of that tenant in the bottom line.
When building owners are proactive, when building owners are very courteous and have a very professional way of handling things within the building, and this comes all down to property management, then the tenants are much less likely to even want to look at other buildings. So what I mean by that is, for real life example, a client of mine, I come to them, they've been a client for, you know, as long as I've been in the business, and I've done 2 deals with them. First deal, moved them into the building, lease came up, and I'm like, all right, we're ready to go back in the market, ready to go back to exploring the market. We want to make sure we leverage the market so that you get the best deal. And, you know, that's my job, and I'm sure owners hate to hear that, but that's reality. That person said, Patrick, I'm not even interested in the other market. These guys have been so great. Every issue we've ever had, they've been very diligent in doing it. The security guard up front, Bob, has been wonderful. He knows all of us by name. We just have a very good sense of home. The ownership has done a great job with the maintenance of the building. We've never had any issues. It's a hassle to move, one. We just want you to work on renewal with this building, period. And no matter what I said is, well, we got to go leverage market. We're not interested in leveraging the market. Do what you got to do, but we just want to stay here. That, to me, is great.
Excellent. So we're going to be opening up to questions for Patrick in a minute. You can submit any questions you have via the chat panel. And as you prepare and submit your questions, I'll just take a quick minute to recap some of the key points we heard from Patrick during the webinar. Small details make a difference. Every detail counts. Promote capabilities that others don't, maybe such as online systems for the tenants. Improve tenant efficiency because time is a valuable resource. Responsiveness is the first cousin to time. Keep your tenants informed. There are changing and new levels of tenant expectations. Automate the mundane. Document tenant regular requirements and preferences. We had intended to include industry veteran Brett Lazar's perspectives in this webinar, but we do want to leave time for questions and answers. So we will make insights from Brett on tenant retention available to you via email and through our on-demand microsite in the coming days. So what you can expect from us is look for 3 additional vignettes with further insights on this topic, bonus content from Patrick Braswell on taking better advantage of communicating LEED certification to tenants and prospective tenants. You can hear from Brett Lazar on taking tenant communications to the next level, as well as his take on the impact of changing tenant expectations. We also want to remind you that this webinar is part of our Building Operations Masters series. And our upcoming topics include bringing your business online, risk management, and more. You can register for the entire series through the URL below, and we'll include a link to do this in our follow-up emails from this webinar. And with that, we'll now open it up to questions.
Okay, I already have a few questions coming in, so I'll start there. Again, if you have questions for Patrick, this is your chance. Type them into your chat window, and as they come in, I will address them. So the first one I received is, Patrick, in, you know, your 10 years of experience, what is the biggest single change you've seen with regards to how tenants select a location?
Wow, that's a great question, Sarah, and I just want to thank you for the opportunity to do this webinar. It's been a great experience, and I really just appreciate the opportunity to talk to everyone today. As far as the biggest change I've seen in the way the tenants select properties over the last 10 years, I think it has to deal with technology. And what I mean by that is the redundancy of power, what type of energy and cables are coming into buildings. In Atlanta is a technology hub, so it's probably more specific to our industry, but there are so many technology companies here that if they were to lose any sort of power into the building, if their servers were to go down, I mean, it would be a mission critical thing for that company to where they could lose millions and millions of dollars. So I think that more so than anything else I've seen over the last 10 years has changed dramatically. And it's a question that's popping up more and more as far as redundant power and what type of cabling is coming into the buildings. One other quick thing on that too. I've had a lot of companies ask me about Comcast. Is Comcast in the building? Can we get Comcast as far as the small business? So I think Comcast is doing a really good job with their commercials because I've had a ton of questions about that lately. So just something to bear in mind.
Okay, great. Thanks, Patrick. So the questions are rolling in, so I'll just continue here. And you kind of addressed this a little bit, but maybe you want to talk about it a little more. How do you see LEED and Green Globes affecting tenant retention or building selection?
I think it's just especially the bigger the tenants are. What I mean by that, are they a Fortune 500 company? Are they a public company? As we continue to go further and further into it, LEED being more prevalent in the markets, the larger the companies are, the more they ask about it. You know, as far as the smaller small businesses are concerned, unless that company is dealing in some sort of green industry, I feel as though they're not asking the question that often. But again, if it's a Fortune 500 company or a larger public company, not necessarily Fortune 500, or it's a client that is dealing within the green industry in some way, whether it be, you know, green technologies or anything like that, that is when it's going to be a big, they gotta have it. But as far as I'll go back to this on the Fortune 500 companies, they are asking that question and it is a must nowadays. So if your building is the type that's chasing after any sort of, you know, public companies, Fortune 500 companies, they are going to make that a mandate in their RFPs to you guys.
Okay, great. Thank you. We have one question that says, how do you suggest landlords with multiple buildings / managers track manager response time and resolution?
Again, I kind of will go back to make sure that you have some sort of online system in place to where when they put in their request, it'll automatically log it, and then it will log at a certain time when you got back to that tenant, and then it will log in a time of when whatever the request was met. And I hear you on the multiple buildings and multiple locations, but, you know, I'm sure Sarah or someone else can talk to you guys a little bit about what they can do for you guys and what type of systems they have in place. I mean, if you're using the internet and you're using the web and you've got some sort of system in place to where you can manage all those buildings under kind of, you know, one roof, so to speak, then it shouldn't be that difficult. But again, that's not my expertise. I'm just representing the tenants that are either going to be moving out or renewing their leases.
Okay, great. And then I don't know if you have a lot of experience. This is in relation to industrial tenants.
Okay.
But what would you consider as far as a fair, as far as renewal allowances, after a 5 or 7 year lease?
In industrial?
Yeah.
Is that right, Sarah?
Yep. And then maybe if you can speak to the tenants you work with, if not industrial.
Well, unfortunately, you know, in all the deals that I've done, I've never actually done an industrial deal. So I can't, I mean, if I were to tell you something, it would be me just kind of going off the cuff. So I really wouldn't know. And it also would be specific to that industry. I mean, Atlanta may be different than whatever the person's asking for. So I don't want to, give them the wrong advice on that one. If you want to ask me office, I'll tell you about office all day long.
Okay. Here's a question, kind of more in the marketing front, and kind
okay.
of how does a small independent office business get their name out there like the big guys, quote unquote?
Well, for me personally, being with a smaller company, and again, I did work with Colliers, which is the third largest real estate firm in the world. I think for us, we have really done a great job of using LinkedIn to get our name out there. Facebook, my wife's on Facebook. I actually am not on Facebook. I am on Twitter. But I think the biggest thing for business is and for us has been LinkedIn. And it has allowed me and the rest of my associates here at Scotland Ryan Associates to really target companies and then figure out ways that we're linked in to them as far as what connections we have or people that we know that actually know someone to them. And then just reaching out to them through LinkedIn, but also LinkedIn provides a great resource to where you can do kind of what they call updates. And so once a day, I'll go in there and update a good business tip for the day, or maybe there's a really great office deal out in Buckhead that I know about that I'll throw out there. And I do that on Twitter as well. And the response that I've gotten from that has just been, it's been better than I would ever expected. I mean, most of my leads now come from LinkedIn and Twitter. I also do a blog, and have done one for almost a year now. And that's how, Sarah in Building Engines found me, was through my blog, which is mossatlanta.com, mosatlanta.com. And I mean, whenever you were to Google Office Space Atlanta or Atlanta Office Space or Tenant Rep Atlanta through the blog that I have written or the many blogs that I've written, I come up on the first page, which has been another great way for people to find me. And the surprising thing is, and this is very surprising, but if you just want to do it right now while you're on the computer, just Google Office Space Atlanta. What you will find is none of the really big firms, whether it be CB, Colliers, or Cushman, or JLL, none of them are on the first page. So it's a resource that not many people are taking advantage of right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree. We have our own blog here going at Building Engines, too, and I feel exactly the same way about it. All right. We'll take a few more questions here. Here's one. Do you find that larger tenants are having issues with landlords having their own online system and tenants having their own IEM core? Can you speak to that a little bit and how they marry the two?
I have, as far as the larger, and when I say larger, I'm thinking full floor tenants and above. As far as their systems and the landlord systems kind of fighting or having infighting, so to speak, I have not run into that issue yet. I'm not saying that it does not exist. I just personally, through the larger clients that I have represented, I have not found that to be an issue.
And I would also say that probably, you know, nowadays integrations happen a lot easier, so I'm sure they can integrate.
Yeah.
Okay. Someone wants some specific Twitter recommendations. So what are some examples of ways you have utilized Twitter in a building and or maintaining a business relationship?
As far as Twitter's concerned, I think the most important thing is to keep conversations going. So an example for me personally, there's a company called Response Mine here in Atlanta, and I've been wanting to meet with their CEO because they've got a need, or at least I perceive them to have a need coming up in the next year or so. And I called the guy, called the person's assistant. Never once got in touch with him, but found out through LinkedIn that he had a Twitter account. So I started following his Twitter account, and through knowing what he likes to talk about, and I mean, the guy was on Twitter at least 3 or 4 times a day, I started to respond to his quote unquote tweets. I feel kind of stupid saying that, but yeah, I mean, I followed, you know, followed his tweets, and then I started responding to him, and lo and behold, he and I developed a relationship over Twitter, and we're having coffee next week, to talk about, you know, networking with one another, and obviously to talk about his office space as well. So, you know, I started off doing Twitter where I would send out 5 or 6 tweets all about office space, and realized that that got me some good followers. It didn't get me any meetings. It took me to actually realize that the people on Twitter want to have conversations with you. So I started following, you know, more closely the people that I wanted to meet with, and then responded to their tweets and started talking to them about things that they're interested in. It's a great tool to see what your tenants within the buildings are talking about and are interested in, and it's a great conversation starter.
Great. Another one I see here that's kind of interesting is, as far as landlord being the building owner, manager or the owner, and the question is that tenants mostly perceive the building manager as their landlord versus the owner. Is this worth changing, or should the focus simply be on improving the overall management service?
The focus should just be improving the overall management service. I don't think it, to them, they don't care. They just care about how their problems are dealt with. And again, you know, one thing, and I know I mentioned it in the webinar, but I'll say it again. When we go on these tours and we are representing tenants, the landlord reps or the landlord brokers are not talking about what's in place to deal with people's issues. And people aren't going to think about the type of response time they get until they actually have an issue. So for an owner or a property manager to be proactive in the actual initial tour with someone, and then once you get in, to be even more proactive with, okay, if you have some sort of issue, this is how we respond to it, and this is the type of response you can expect from us. That just, that little bit right there would put you head and shoulders above most property managers and building owners.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. I'm going to do 2 more questions here. The first will be back to the whole idea of bringing everything online.
Okay.
And so do you find that tenants want to have all of their employees having this online access to that centralized system that you spoke of, or just a few kind of, you know, master controllers from each company?
I think they probably just want a few master controllers. I think especially if the company has 100 employees or more, I mean, that could just get really dangerous. Now, it'd be great to say, and if that's how they want to manage it, then you have to really think about, do you want that many people with the ability to get to you? Because I'm sure there's some people up there that might think that something's wrong, which there isn't. But I think as far as, you know, us here at SWA and at Colliers, and then for most of my clients, I think the consensus has been to just have, whether it be the office manager or, you know, an HR person or whoever, to have at least 2 or 3 people that have access to the system, and then make sure that it is communicated to the rest of the office that if you have an issue, please send it to Bob or Betsy or Frank or whoever.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sarah, what do you think on that?
Well, I think definitely I'd see more just a few representatives chosen from each company, which you can always change it. You know, you can add more or take away, but I think it's better to start small than give everyone the power and lead to
chaos.
So we'll touch here on a pricing question, since we haven't done anything there yet. And this person says, pricing seems to be our biggest concern. What type of reduction is happening out there today? $1 square foot or higher?
Again, it's going to be market specific as to, you know, what is typical, but I can just give you the example for Atlanta, because that's where I've done most of my deals. And I have done deals in other markets. Just got done doing one up in New York and done a couple in LA recently, but I will just talk to Atlanta specifically. And I think, you know, again, and I hate to even just throw a big net out there, because there's a building here in Atlanta that's probably the fifth nicest building, and at the height of this building's heyday, they were getting $34 a square foot. Well, now you can get a deal because AT&T moved out of the building, and it's a 700,000 square foot building, and there's 450,000 square feet available. You can get a deal done there for $24.50. So that's a $10 price difference from the heyday of where it was to where it is now. But if you're going to take it as far as just Atlanta as a whole, I'd say that we're probably $2 a square foot less from where we were at, you know, call it the dot-com boom before the bust happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably from 2 years ago before the recession hit, I would say that it's probably about $1.50 off from where we were on that mark.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, it's funny. You seem to be the social media guru at this point. I have a lot of social media questions coming in for you. So we'll just quick touch on, as our last thing, just touch on that a little bit. One person said, how do you build a bigger connection on LinkedIn, since you said you use LinkedIn a lot? And then the other part of that was, someone was asking about, I don't know, were you self-taught, or if you could recommend any literature / books that can advise property managers on how to best utilize social media sites?
The first question is, you know, how did I build up a following on LinkedIn? I originally did something which, if I would look back upon it now, I would say was a mistake, because it got me, I'd say I've got over 500 contacts, probably got closer to 600 contacts on LinkedIn. And out of that 600, I'd say at least 450, we'll call it, I actually personally know and have met with. And then the other 150, I have no idea who they are. And there's a way to, on LinkedIn, and you might want to do this, and I don't know, but there's a way on LinkedIn to actually go in and download all of your contacts from your CRM system. And then LinkedIn will actually send an email out to everyone that's on your CRM system with an invite. And that got me from 50 to, say, 350 pretty quickly. But 150 of those people I did not know. So the way that I would do it now versus that is just truly every time you meet someone, just say, hey, you know, I'm on LinkedIn. Do you mind if I send you an invite? And most people will say yes. Oh, I'd love to. And then that's how I've built it up from the 350 to the, you know, closer to 600. It's just every time, you know, I meet someone at a networking event and I'm interested in knowing them better, or I see, you know, meet someone for coffee or lunch or whatever the case may be, I ask them, you know, would you mind if I sent you a LinkedIn invite? Now, the second question.
Just if you had any recommendations, if you ever on social
on
media, literature
yeah.
or books or anything.
No, I'm pretty much self-taught. I mean, I read a lot of stuff online, but there was no book or anything that I read. There's, and I can't remember who the person is, but there was a really good online book, and maybe if you Google, you know, LinkedIn tips book or something like that, you can find it. But there was a really good, like, 20-page LinkedIn book that I got online, that I downloaded online, that was tremendous in just helping me create my LinkedIn account as to, you know, how to actually search companies versus just searching individuals, and how to take the initial title and just not only have it as my title, but add, you know, you've got 160 characters there. So instead of just saying principal at Scotland Wright and Associates, say something like, you know, office tenant rep, principal, you know, just explain exactly what you do, because when people see your name in searches, or, you know, see your name when you send them an invite, that's the only thing they'll see. So they'll see your name and then 160 characters. So it's a great opportunity for you to actually describe what you do.
I was just going to touch on that and say there's so much out there. I'm in marketing, but I get a lot in my, you know, webinars in my email every day. And if you just Google social media educational resources, you'll get a ton of stuff. So,
yeah, I would agree with that. Again, I read a 20-page book that I found online, and how I found it, I mean, this was a year ago. I have no idea. I think I may have Googled it. I don't know.
Well, great. I can make a couple recommendations, I guess, of books that I've also come across. And they're probably more than just social media, but they'll also include just general online marketing for the new age and e-marketing. So if you look for anything by Ardith Albee, and then there's also a book called Content Rules, which is about creating blogs, podcasts, videos, ebooks, webinars. That's by Anne Handley and CC Chapman. So those are just a couple.
Yeah, what really kind of opened up my eyes as far as the internet's concerned, not just social media, is a book called What Would Google Do? I think it's Jeff Jarvis, I'm not positive, but that was a really good book. And then another one that I recently read was called Socialnomics. And I can't remember who that's by.
Well, that's great. I think that's enough to get everyone started. And we've kind of exhausted most of our questions here. So again, I just want to thank everyone for joining us. And as I said earlier, we have a number of resources. We're going to be sending out 3 bonus vignettes that contain content that we didn't include in the webinar, and also comments from Brett Lazar, who's an industry veteran. And we have a microsite full of content and checklists and best practices. So be sure to look for those emails, and you can also register for our whole series. So again, thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you at future webinars. Thank you so much, Patrick.
Thank you.